This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Newton Group Transfer. They are here to help you if you're stuck in a timeshare. These stories from people who have these timeshares and can't get out of them, they're shocking. These timeshare companies, not all of them, but so many, they get their hooks into you and you can't give them up. You can't give them up. Or they'll do things like they charge you thousands of dollars. One girl, she got past her timeshare when her mother passed away. She gets past the timeshare, doesn't want the timeshare, doesn't use the timeshare. They tell her she can get out of it for $4,000. She has to come up with a $4,000 check. This is not right. It's unjust. And Newton Group Transfers is here to help you. If you are in a timeshare and want out or know someone who is, call 888-845-3773. That's 888-84-JESSE. Or go to timesharejesse.com. Newton Group Transfer. They will help you out.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
What's the most you've ever rooted for a criminal in your life? Don't lie and say, I've never. Yes, you have. Somebody at some point in your life committed a crime and you were cheering for him. Maybe cheering isn't even the word I should be using right now. Admire a little? Is that a bad way to put it? Admire a criminal? Are we allowed to do that? I'm about to tell you a true story today. You are going to think I'm making this story up. Easily verifiable. You're welcome to go look it up. I'm telling you the story of the greatest criminal, in my opinion, who ever lived. Virtually everything he did, I would like to think, I would do something similar. No, I probably wouldn't. I'd screw it up somewhere along the way. But it's one of those guys, you hear his tale and you're like, yeah, that's how you do that. Ooh, that was smart. I'd do it that way too. Oh, how do you think of that? Oh, nice. It's so unbelievable in this day and age where you can't necessarily have the happy ending that often. I'm not sure they would even make the movie about this without adjustments. And all that said, you know, I'm not big on disclaimers. Let's keep in mind, this is most definitely a criminal, without question. Only he didn't start out that way. Now let's set the stage here. We're talking the year 1700. Now, it's not 1700, it's in the 1690s, but remember, I would just make everything simple. Just around 1700. This is what's called the Golden Age of Piracy. And what's funny about piracy is, obviously, we've all seen the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, and you've read pirate books and seen pirate things, and matey, and all these other, you know all that stuff. Everybody knows the pirate story. But the lines of legality when it came to piracy back in this time were real fuzzy sometimes. You know what the difference is between a privateer? You heard of a privateer? A privateer and a pirate? You know what the difference is? Piece of paper. A privateer, and this is going to come into play here in a few, a privateer is simply a Navy man who goes into business for himself sometimes an actual pirate who the government finds. Either way, he's just a man, capable fighting man on a ship, and the government presents him with something called a letter of marque. You know, let's say you got one from Britain. Here you go, Mr. Pirate. Here's a letter of marque. Now, these letters of marque were not universal get-out-of-jail-free cards. That pirate couldn't just take off and go raid and rape and pillage whatever he wanted, but a specific country, say, France or Spain, England gives that pirate a letter of marque and says, you see a Spanish ship? Have a good time. Bring me back the spoils, of which you will get a share, and we'll call it good. And I don't want you to think it's really odd to me. It wasn't some under-the-table, smoke-filled backroom deal with privateers. It was open. I mean, normally if you're going to hire mercenaries, that's essentially what you're doing. Normally if you're going to hire mercenaries, you're doing it because you want to kind of separate yourself. Oh, they weren't all about that. And these were written, signed agreements between the privateer and the nation of England. You will get a certain percentage of this. You will get this. Again, this is not some wink, wink mafia deal. This is a very official contract. Here, producer Chris, here's a letter of marque. Anybody you see flying a Dutch flag, you can quite literally slaughter, rape, and murder everyone on the ship. Keep 27% of the goods for yourself and bring the rest of them back home. Sign right here, and initial here. I was a privateer. It was big in the day. And we're going to have to set the world stage up briefly before we introduce the star of our tale. We have England. England, at this point in time, I'm just going to call them Britain from now on. I never know, and I still don't know the difference. England, Great Britain, the UK. Raheem Kassam has come on and explained it 1,000 times. I'm still confused. It doesn't matter. Britain, at this time, 1690s, they are a powerful country, yes. They are a respectable naval power, yes. They are not quite yet the king of the ocean. They haven't reached the peak of their empire, and they haven't quite reached complete and utter naval dominance just yet. You also have Spain and France. England has joined with Spain in an alliance against France. This is a big, big, big era of colonizing the world. They're all in a big race to do it. As you know, because you listen to this show, all these countries were in that game extensively. I mean, honestly, as you've heard me say before, nobody bigger than France. You go, I'm not sure how long it would take you to find something like this because I didn't do it. I haven't seen one of these in a while. You go look at a world map of the Spanish Empire at the height of its power. It's absurd. You look at that and think, oh my goodness, they ruled the world. So you have Britain and Spain alliance against France. Now, let's jump just across the world map over to a little place called India. India at this time was ruled by a king. We're not going to go into his name and whatnot, but India is ruled by a king. As you know, as we've talked about extensively, trade is everything. The sea lanes are everything. And India, monetarily, at this point in time, is almost undoubtedly the wealthiest nation on the planet because they're drowning in spices and silks and things everybody wants. It is the hub of things everyone wants, India is. Plus, probably some hot Indian chicks, Chris. I'm talking pepper, and it is the hub. If you want to be a major power, you want a foothold there, and Britain gets a major, major foothold there. They get a publicly traded company, which ended up being the most powerful company in the history of mankind, called the East India Company. The East India Company gets a foothold in India. Their executives, I mean, this would be like, gosh. This would be like Amazon moving to India and all their employees into India. And that relationship was interesting. I'll explain.
The Talk Radio Revolution. Jesse Kelly.
You have to have a gold IRA now. It's no longer an option. You have to have it. You see what's happening out there. It's more than just the Fed's printing money. It's more than just a stock market that kind of seems oddly high, doesn't it? You have all these businesses going out of business, all these people out of work, and yet the stock market's high. How do you think that story ends? Use your head. How do you think that ends? I'm not telling you to go pull all your money out of the bank and hide in the mountains. All I'm saying is get a gold IRA from Gold Alliance. Diversify. That way, if the worst happens, and it might, if the worst happens, you are protected. GoldAlliance.com/Jesse. That's GoldAlliance.com/Jesse. And you can get up to $5,000 in free gold and silver coins. East India Company in the kingdom, I guess we can call it, of Iran, of India. It's an interesting relationship. The king has welcomed this massive, massively powerful East India Company into his country, and they work well together. The East India Company has wealthy executives, wealthy employees all over the place. Like I said, it would be like Amazon moving into some other country where they're basically in a partnership with the government. Now you have the stage. Let us go to the man. His name is Henry Every. I'm not pronouncing that wrong. It's E-V-E-R-Y, Henry Every. He was born, and I have no idea about his childhood. And this is why. This is why. Sometimes, now I'm going to tell you what parts of the story we know. His childhood, we don't. Because I read something, and it said specifically that he was born poor. We know he's poor. His parents were tenant farmers, grew up really rough, and had to join the Navy, the British Navy, to get out of that life. And the next thing I read, the second I put that thing down, and these were both presented to me as accurate historical accounts. The second I put that thing down, I picked something up and said, Henry Every's parents were middle class, normal people, just normal middle class people. He just loved the water and joined the Navy. So I have no idea. I have no idea. He was born. We do know he was born in England. They think Devon, England. Apparently a lot of pirates come from Devon, England. And what we do know, let's focus on that instead of what we don't, is he did join the British Navy. That is not a small thing. It's not a small thing because that's a terrible, terrible life at this time. Ship life today in the year 2020 is tough. I've had the chance to talk to these guys who run these gigantic cargo vessels across the ocean. And I mean, these are mega wealthy companies, mega powerful, you know, vessels, modern, very modern, even then. It's lonely and boring and the food sucks. And this is 2020. What's it like in 1690? Hot, disease-ridden. Pay is almost non-existent. The smell, do you know what it must smell like below decks on one of those ships? I was in the Marine Corps in the year 2002, 2003, and there were places we would go, a barracks room sometimes, you'd walk in and the smell would be bad from three or four dudes having to stay there. What's it smell like in a hot ship with no AC and everybody's pooping in a bucket in the corner? I know, it's gross. Sorry about your breakfast. It's gross. It's so bad aboard these naval vessels, they routinely did something, the military did something called impressment. They would force you. They could never get enough people, so they would force you into the Navy. And sometimes, I mean really force you. Now, sometimes they would lightly threaten. Sometimes they would track down a man who was heavily in debt and tell him he had to. Sometimes they'd find someone who was convicted of a crime and tell him you have to. And other times, they would flat out billy club you and kidnap you and drag you onto a ship. Or get you hammered drunk until you pass out and drag you onto a ship. Blatant government-sanctioned kidnapping. How bad does the life have to be when that's what you resort to? Avery joins the military. This is the era of piracy a little, but slavery a lot. African slavery is huge business at this time. There are entire companies set up in Africa, and it wasn't at this point in time the Wild West I realize we're talking about human beings, which makes this very odd, but it was very much set up as any other highly regulated, taxed commodity. All right, you have a contract for this. All right, we will give you so many black guys at this price and so many black women at this price. And you know the black kids are a discount. It's very odd. When you read, and you can actually go back and read old bills for them. It's like you're purchasing a, it's like you're purchasing a crate full of duct tape. It looked that way. Avery does his time in the Navy. Gets out. He's done with that. And then an opportunity arises for him to be a privateer. A privateer, it's going to be a joint privateer venture between Britain and Spain. And what he's going to do is he's going to get on a few privateer ships down in Spain, and they're going to go pillage the French. Remember, by this point, he's an experienced Navy man. He's been clear over to the Caribbean. He's been all around the African coast. He knows his way around the water really, really well. And they take off from England, heading down towards Spain. The plan is this. They get to Spain. They wait for their letter of marque to arrive. Remember what a letter of marque is. That's their get-out-of-jail-free card from England saying you can go pillage all the French ships you want. The plan is get to Spain, get the letter of marque, which is supposed to already be on the way. It'll probably beat you there. And then take off in these warships and go beat up some French. Sounds like a plan, right, for a Navy man? Trying to make some cash. Find a merchant vessel. Life is good. They take off from England. Should have taken about 2 weeks to get to Spain. There are endless problems with the journey. It takes them 5 months to get to Spain. By the time they get there, they're worried it's going to be too late, that the letter of marque's gone or expired, or for goodness sakes, 5 months, the war could be over. You don't know. They get there and find out the letter of marque hasn't even arrived yet. Well, this is kind of a big deal, and here's why it's a big deal. As a privateer at this time, you got paid once every 6 months. They were already under contract. They couldn't, by contract, were not allowed to go work for anyone else while they waited for this letter of marque, which should have already been there. So instead, they're forced to stay on and sleep on these ships, which are just docked in Spain, not doing anything. They are now at the poverty level, because you don't go be a privateer for the salary. You go be a privateer for the booty, for the loot you get. Not that kind of booty, Chris. I mean, maybe that too. I don't know. It's Spain, I would assume. Hang on. Can you imagine what it would feel like to be evicted from your home? How devastating would that be? And you know what would make it worse? If you got evicted because you're a victim of home title theft. That would make it hurt even worse through no fault of your own. But it's happening right now. You know that, right? People are being evicted from their homes because of home title theft. You see, they get a hold of your home title. It's online, it's digital, it's not a piece of paper anymore. They forge your signature on it, take a loan out against it. You are the one who has to pay that back. Only you wouldn't, because you're getting these past due notices in the mail and you're shrugging them off because you didn't take out a loan. What are they talking about? Oh, but in the eyes of the bank, you did. Go to HomeTitleLock.com right now and protect yourself. HomeTitleLock.com. Use the code Jesse. Get 30 free days of protection. They're on the ships. They're waiting and they're waiting and they're waiting, and their letters of marque are not arriving. They're not allowed to do anything else. They are prisoners on these ships. And to say they're getting restless would be putting it mildly. Finally, they've had quite enough. Avery himself, Avery, I should call him, comes up with a plan. And I am going to throw in my opinion here. This I could not find, but I think the rest of our story, as I tell it today, I think Avery gathered the intelligence he needed while spending time on that dock. And I think Avery had this entire thing planned out while spending time on this dock. From now on, it's just simply too jaw-droppingly well executed. Avery is planning a mutiny. Remember, this is an instant death sentence back in the day, a mutiny. Instant death sentence. Avery starts a recruitment drive. He's bouncing around. There are four privateer ships. He's bouncing around them, recruiting people. Gets enough men, he thinks, to take over the ship called the Charles. I believe it was called the Charles II. We're just going to call it the Charles. He waits one night. He and about 25 dudes take this ship over. Everybody on the ship is not on board with the mutiny. Some of them have to be held down. Some of them have to be locked away. But again, remember when I told you you're going to root for this guy? He didn't harm a hair on anybody's head. Did not want to, and this man has never been a pirate or a criminal. He's a man who had enough. He not only takes over the vessel, one of the captains of one of the other vessels sees what's going on and begins to fire on the Charles. Avery cuts the anchor rope, which is not something you normally do, but cuts the anchor rope. He's in a hurry and with his crew of mutineers manages to get completely out of the harbor as the Spanish fort also trains its guns on the ship. Avery makes the grand escape. Okay, now you have this big, fast ship loaded with guns. You're out in the water. However, you do have a bunch of people on your ship, and you're not sure who wants to be there. Avery does not bring them up and begin gouging out their eyeballs and threatening them. He calls each and every one of them up and says, "If you want to join me, we are going to make our fortune somewhere. If you do not, there's no harm that will come to you. We will put you on a boat and send you back to shore. You are totally free to go." Even the captain of the ship he took over, he thought highly of him and offered him to be his first mate. The captain declined. Many men declined. And Avery, true to his word, simply let all of them off safely onto the shore. Like I said, you're going to root for this guy. He's smart and he's cool. And he takes off because he's a pirate now with a really fast ship and a lot of guns on it and experienced men on it. And he needs to bone up his crew a bit before he goes for the big prize, which, again, I don't know, but I think he already has it planned. Don't worry. We'll get there in a minute. He takes off down to West Africa. The coast of West Africa is absurdly good to him. Remember, the ivory, the slave trade, there's just an absurd amount of merchant shipping in and around West Africa at this time. He has very, very little difficulty taking down other merchant vessels. He jacks somebody's anchor right away. And again, there's going to be part of you that roots for him. Does not harm European passengers. Clearly, the guy is probably a really extreme racist, maybe even extreme back in the day, because if you were black or Indian or one of the Muslim guys, he had no problem killing you and doing horrible things to you. But to people that he viewed as his fellow Europeans, he wouldn't harm them. When he would take over ships, he would steal goods, would not harm any Europeans, would offer them openly to come join his crew. And they did. He was charismatic, and they did a lot. Dutch guys, French guys, you name it. You want to come join me? We're a pirate ship. We're going to strike it rich. And his ship begins to gain strength and gain strength in every, because he knows what he wants to do here. He knows he wants to go pillage the Indian Ocean. He decides he's going to retrofit his ship, and he removes one entire deck of it. I don't expect you to really know or care what that means. Here's what it means. It went from being a heavily armored, fast ship to a heavily armored, really, really fast ship. He just took so much weight off of it. This thing now flies through the water, packed full of capable sailors and committed to piracy. So committed to piracy that he actually writes an open letter. Now, hold on. Let's go back here and set this up. Remember what we have going on in the Indian Ocean? The East India Company and the Kingdom of India? They have a bit of a partnership. They each have many ships of their own, and the Indian Ocean is absolutely full of absurdly wealthy ships hauling insane amounts of spice and ivory and gold and silver and silk. This story is every pirate story fantasy you've ever heard rolled up into one. This guy is so bold, he writes an open letter to the East India Company and says, "I have a ship full of studs here. We are coming to do piracy over there. Here's a signal." I'm not going to go into the details. It's boring. But here's a signal you can do with your flag if you see me. And I'll do it with my flag. And then we'll leave each other alone. But just a heads up, we're coming. And sometimes this can get confusing when you look at a map, or at least think of a map between Africa and India and all that ocean, the Indian Ocean, things like that. And you wonder to yourself, well, how did any pirate ever see another ship, ever? Understand, oceans, yes, they're big places. Yes, you can easily lose other ships, but especially at this time, we're not in GPS, we're not in engines, we're not in anything. We're in sails. In this time, ships traveled with specific winds, with specific currents. It's still a big place. You can still easily lose one, but you have a pretty good idea if you stay here, ships are going to be coming by at some point in time. And these companies, as you can imagine, they have routes they take. The East India Company, if it's going to country X or country Y, will have a specific route it's going to take. And who's going to pick up on patterns like that? Hang on.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen. for late nights writing English papers.
For your teen's music taste.
For dinners, where they talk more on their phone than with you.
For the first time, they call you mom.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen, and you can't imagine the reward.
To learn more about adopting a teen, visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Part-time job, full-time hustle, all-time Shiro to all of us. You nurture, we listen. You teach, we thrive. You lift our spirits, but we've got to lay down the truth. It's time for you, our Shiro, to stretch for the stars. Start saving more for retirement now so you can feel prepared and live your life to the fullest. Get free tips to help boost your retirement savings now at aceyourretirement.org/Shiro.
A message brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Every knows where the shipping lanes are, and it's not only the East India Company. Remember, India itself has many, many, many vessels, and there is a humongous Muslim population at this time in that area. Why does that matter? Because the country's fabulously wealthy, you have all these Muslims there, and where do Muslims go, or at least my understanding of it, where do Muslims want to go, have to go, it's a requirement, I don't know for sure, Mecca, at least once in their life, it's something they were, at least at this time we're doing, I don't want to say to whether they're all still doing it, I don't know. I know it's a big deal, today too, Chris, I just don't know whether, you know, an American Muslim, whether they have to go to Mecca and stuff, I don't know. I think they do, but whatever. At this point, you got to get your butt to Mecca at one point or another. And if you're this India shipping company, they're not called the India Shipping Company. They're called like Moo. It starts with an M and it's really confusing and I'm not going to bother you with it. If you're India's shipping company, you're going to put some goods, some money on these gigantic vessels. You're going to load them down with cash, gold, silks. I mean, these are going to be floating banks, all of them, on top of all the passengers, regular passengers on these ships going from India over to Mecca. Mecca's in Saudi Arabia, remember. It's called Saudi Arabia at this time. There's no Saudi Arabia yet. You essentially have huge cruise ships full of people and wealth passing goods back and forth. Now, these people are not stupid. They're well aware that they have tremendous amounts of wealth on these ships, and they're well aware that since the dawn of man, when you have it, you're going to find somebody eventually who wants to take it. They know there's piracy out there, so it's not as if these people were negligent. They load these ships down with cannon and troops. They know we have to fortify these ships because we're going to be appealing to people. Every has a plan. Every cruises on up the Red Sea and goes on a bit of a recruiting drive. And who does Every find on this recruiting drive? American pirates. Five ships, to be specific. Now, I know what you're probably saying. Jesse, I didn't know there were American pirates. Allow me to elaborate. Remember, America's not a country yet. It's a bunch of colonies. Colonies in the 1690s. Colonies that, understandably, felt a bit neglected by the home country of England. Wasn't a ton of protection? Wasn't a ton of overseeing? England wasn't providing a lot. So the colonies turned to piracy. And because we were a Christian nation, they really didn't see a problem with absolutely pirating any other religion. Got some Muslims, got some Buddhists out there, got whatever. Go steal their stuff and bring it back here. Pirates were a welcomed, I can't stress this enough, welcomed part of the economy in the American colonies in the early, early stages. American pirates were not uncommon. Every sails up, and he has renamed the Charles by now. He's renamed it. It's called the Fancy. It's kind of weird, whatever. Apparently it was a nice ship. I know. It's the one part of the story I don't like, Chris. Why couldn't it be like the Skull or something sweet? But whatever. I would have gone with the Bloody Dagger. Either way, he sails up, runs into five American pirate ships because the pirates just hang out in certain areas. Areas like Madagascar. I mean, everybody knows about the Caribbean, and actually we're going to get to that in a little while. But areas like Madagascar and in an island or two off Madagascar, well-known pirate hubs. He finds these other pirate ships and recruits these five American vessels to join him in a very dangerous, very, very, very ambitious plan. And that plan is to hunt down this caravan of ships coming from India to Mecca and raid them for everything they have. Dangerous? You bet. Extremely. Probably not going to live. If you do live, never going to have to work again. The Americans agree. They join with Every, and they wait, and they wait, and they wait. And finally, the caravan of ships gets to them, but the caravan of ships, remember when I said these were not idiots. They knew where the pirates were too. They knew people wanted what they had. So they got to where they were at night and killed all the lights on the ship so they could slip by them. They almost made it.
One in three adults has prediabetes. One in three. That means it could be you, your football buddy, your football buddy, or you, your best man, your worst man, you, your dog walker, your cat jogger. While one in three adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. That's doihaveprediabetes.org.
Wait, did they just say one in three adults has prediabetes? That's 33.33333% of adults. That means it could be me, my boss, or my boss's boss, or me, my favorite sister, or my other sister. That's seven members of my 21-person romantic book club. Wait, the one in three could be me, my karaoke partner Carol, or my karaoke enemy Jeff. I'm going to take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its pre-diabetes awareness partners.
Caravan almost made it by. The last ship in the caravan, which would obviously be the slowest ship, gets spotted by Every. In his little band of pirates. Keep in mind, Every only has in total about 400 troops. The enemy, or shouldn't call them the enemy, the poor people trying to protect what's theirs, they've got about 800. Tons of cannons. They've got a problem. Every, he sees the prize, and he goes for it anyway. He's heavily, heavily outmanned. He's heavily outgunned. At least two of his five pirate ships he recruited see the size of the guns and the ship they're going to and say, nah, I'm going to hang back. Every looks around and says, I'm not. Fortune favors the bold. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly returns next. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
Henry Every is going to risk it all now. He is tracking down this very, very wealthy, very powerful ship. He is outnumbered. He is outgunned. But he's very capable. And honestly, remember when I said the movie'd be unrealistic? He's very lucky. The ship starts firing at Every. Every starts firing at the ship. Okay, you can picture how this is going. And let's remember, it's not like in the movies where you just eye up a cannon from 500 yards away and just because you got a little more experience, you fire away and you nail them every single time. This is naval warfare. You don't have advanced sights on these cannons. Your ship is doing what in the ocean water? Moving up and down and swaying back and forth. And remember, these cannons are essentially guns. Moving it about an inch can make a gigantic difference 100 yards from now. The other ship's doing the same. Bobbing up and down, even if you were correct when you shot, there's a chance that other ship has moved significantly up, down, left, or right by the time the cannonball gets there. What I'm telling you is long-range cannonballs were not accurate things, and unless you had tons of them in your ship, you didn't even take that many long-range shots. You really wanted to just try to be faster so you can get up close, broadside, and fire it at them point-blank because that's the only way to hit the dadgum thing half the time. Unless you're Henry Every. In which case, two things happen to you. Again, absurdly unbelievable, but this actually happened. One, remember I said there were tons of guns and troops on this absurdly wealthy ship they're tracking down? Yeah, one of those guns exploded on them, on the ship, when it was surrounded by tons of the troops who had been guarding the ship. All of a sudden, you have wiped out, or they did, I mean, wiped out much of the ship's defenses. That's one. And two, that conversation we just had about how inaccurate cannon fire is, unless you're Henry Every, he hits the mast, the main mast. You don't have to know sailing vessels to know that's the big stick coming out of the middle that holds the big sail. That's the thing that makes the ship go. He disables the ship, essentially. Now, they would have had other sails on there, but I mean, you have against a ship like the Fancy that was faster than everybody anyway, what chance do you have? The answer is zero. He gets to the ship, and now it's going to get a little gruesome. I'll skip over most of that today. We probably all need a good long break after the Gulag episode yesterday, Chris. He gets to the ship, and now it's pirate time like you see in the movies. Now you're boarding. Now you're roping. Now you're laddering over. And now you are in musket fights from 2 feet away, sword fights, knives. There is screaming. There's yelling. There's blood and there's guts. There's limbs being hacked off, eyes being gouged out. They are fighting a war on the high seas. It is a long, long day of bloodshed and hostage situations and blowing people up and stabbing people, and it's a very near-run thing. Remember, Every was heavily outnumbered. However, at the time of the last musket shot, Every is standing on a mountain of treasure, victorious. What kind of treasure are we talking about? Remember how many men I told you he had in total? 400. And the ones who sat out the battle would have gotten very little of the treasure, just for obvious reasons. Every is standing on, they estimate, $200 million in modern money. 50,000 pounds of gold, ivory, everything. Now, I'm not going to gloss over everything and make this man out to be a saint, because the ship is packed full of families and passengers, and now you get the real ugly side of piracy. Nobody minds a cannon fight or two and a good sword fight. That's just swashbuckling piracy. But now the women on the ship suffer greatly, repeatedly, over a long period of time. Many of them throw themselves into the ocean, Muslim women, to save their honor. Many of them dagger themselves to save their honor. Many not only have to suffer repeatedly, some are even taken with the pirates when they leave. Let's not sugarcoat things. That's as ugly as it gets. And we like to tell stories, and we always are going to tell real stories on this show, but always keep in mind, those were real people. Just because they lived long ago doesn't make it less real. That's how somebody ended their existence. Tough. Very, very tough. But he does it. He gets off. He now has all the money in the world sitting on a pile of it. And life is good, right? Yes and no. You've done two things when you rip off that much money, and when you defile that many women. Not even, and these are women, high-born women who were highly thought of. There's even rumor the king of India's own relative was on that ship. We don't know how it worked out for her, but again, these are people who would have had friends in high places. So you've done two things if you're Henry Every. One, you have severely damaged the pocketbook of very, very, very powerful people. On top of that, you have damaged the honor of very powerful people. The king of India, to say he was out for blood would be putting it mildly. He is so livid, he begins locking up people of the British East India Company just because they're British. He becomes an international fugitive. They say he's the first man ever wanted around the globe with a 1,000-pound bounty on his head. That's $1 million, to put it simply for you. Everybody in the world wants this man dead. The East India Company, They have to petition Britain, who has to get involved in severe diplomatic negotiations with India to avoid open war. The Indian king is threatening to kill the Brits that are in his country. He's so mad. The East India Company has to promise to pay back every dime and promise to bring Henry Every's head to the King of India. So it's nice while you're King Pirate. It's nice when you've taken the biggest haul ever. It's not so nice when the whole world wants you dead.
Feeling a little stalky?
Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly DC.
I know that gold is going to hold value. It's going to hold value long after I'm dead and gone. Now, I know what you're saying. Jesse, what are you doing the Oracle thing again? No, it's not that. It's always held its value. What do on this show? We look at history, don't we? Look at history to tell us what's coming, human nature, trends. What's one fairly common thread you've seen throughout almost all my history stories? People in pursuit of gold around the world. Forever. Because it's valuable. That's why you buy precious metals. That's why you get a gold IRA from Gold Alliance. To make sure you're protected. To make sure you have something tangible. Go to goldalliance.com/Jesse. That's goldalliance.com/Jesse. Go there now. Protect that retirement you've worked so hard for. Well, you're in the Indian Ocean. You have effectively angered all the most powerful people in the world. What do you do if you're Every? This is the point in a movie where the criminal would inevitably start making huge, idiotic mistakes, right? This is the point where you're probably expecting me to... Every, he started buying Lamborghinis. Spending all the money, bragging to everybody he could about who he really was and what he just did. And then his big mouth and his pride got him busted. No. Like I said, this guy's different. Every is well aware of the stakes. He's well aware of what he has to do. He actually hangs on to all the stolen gold, but stops in Africa to buy some slaves. Why is he buying slaves? Because you can use slaves to launder money. You can launder bad money back in the day by purchasing slaves. Stops, buys some slaves, but does not buy them with the stolen gold for fear the marks on the stolen gold would be recognized. He hangs on to all of it. He divides up his treasure. His men all got the same share except for Every got two shares. He got double what they got. But keep in mind, piracy isn't always what you see in the movies. Captains were not the biggest, meanest guy. The captains were elected. And if you did not like your captain, you could elect a different captain. And there was more than one elected position on the ship. The quartermaster, this, that. There were different people who had powerful positions. And the agreement on how to split up the treasure is come to beforehand. Like I said, much more organized than you'd think. So they all get an even share. Every gets two. And they begin to disperse slowly. Some of them get off in Africa. Some of them get off in Madagascar. But Every has a plan. Every is heading west. He takes off across the Atlantic Ocean. gets to a secluded island like in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. I'm not exaggerating. It is in the middle of the ocean. And it's deserted. It's not as if it's lush. It's just this empty shell of ground. This part of the story fascinates me because I can't get details on it. He has men on this ship who know they're being hunted. His men are scared to death. Many of them are bailing every chance they get, doing anything they can do. Some are so scared they turn themselves in. These are the most wanted men in the world. Some of his men choose to get off the ship and stay on this secluded island in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean with nothing to eat but sea turtles they've managed to catch. That is real fear. There has to be more to that part of the story, and for the life of me, I could not find it. I have to know what the plan was. Every, however, he's not worried. He's thought all this out, I think. Every continues to sail west, sails into a little place called the Bahamas. Here's the situation in the Caribbean. These are colonies, mind you, colonies. Every, remember, is the most wanted man in the world. Britain is out for his head. India is out for his head. Every sails into, with his ship the Fancy, he sails into the port of a British colony. Sails right on in, and has his men bring a message to the governor, the man in charge of this British colony. The message was simply this. I have all kinds, I think it was 50 tons of ivory tusks. I essentially have a mountain of treasure and a ship. I will give it to you. You're welcome to have it as long as you let me and my men come ashore and just relax for a while here on this island. You know the scene. Pirates coming ashore in the Bahamas. It's going to be a lot of pub crawling, a lot of relaxation. The governor, well, he's not exactly a man to turn down a bribe of that size, nor were any of the governors over there. That's half the reason you took a governorship, so you could go be the king of your own castle and get bribed into wealth. That's one. Two, the governor was having a problem with French vessels raiding his port and harassing him, so he thought it doesn't hurt to have a gigantic armed ship called the Fancy sitting in the harbor with a bunch of very, very capable armed men. Governor agrees to take him in. Eventually, now remember, the governor's not an idiot. He obviously knows you roll in to harbor with a bunch of treasure on your ship. He doesn't know the details. He knows this is probably not on the up and up. But word does get to the Bahamas. Remember, Every is a worldwide bandit. Word gets to the Bahamas. Every is wanted. The governor tells Every, I'm going to arrest you next week. Maybe you want to get out of town. Every and his men leave town. Some of his men, many of his men, actually go to the American colonies. Remember, they're all rich now. One of them pays off the governor of Pennsylvania and marries his daughter. These are wealthy pirates. Some of them did get caught. A few of them hanged. About a quarter of them ended up getting caught. Henry Every, as he sailed off the Bahamas with probably the biggest score monetarily in criminal history, if not definitely one of them, without question, the biggest piracy score ever, and Henry Every's only piracy score. Remember, this was not a career criminal. Sails off from the Bahamas, wealthy beyond belief, and is never seen or heard from again. He did it. He took the one big chance, made the one big score, and did the one thing that all these criminals can't seem to bring themselves to do. He walked away. There are endless, endless rumors out there about what happened to him. They are pretty sure that he passed through England again. They know some of his men did pass through England. Many of his men went right through England on up into Ireland. They don't know where he went from there. There is a rumor, many people believe, that he actually made his way back to that pirate hub in Madagascar and essentially set himself up as a king there. I don't know what I believe. I don't think I need to know. I just know this. That's really freaking cool. If you set aside the murder and assault, tell me that's not the greatest criminal story you've ever heard in your entire life. But there was a negative. Well, more than one. Hang on.
On the Jordan Harbinger Show, you'll hear amazing stories from people that have lived them, from spies to CEOs, even an undercover agent who infiltrated the Gambino crime family. You're about to hear a preview of the Jordan Harbinger Show with Jack Garcia, who did just that.
My career was 24 out of 26 years was solely dedicated working undercover. Now I walk in, I'm in the bar. Now there's a barmaid there, good-looking young lady. She's serving me a drink. Hey, what would you like? I usually, my drink was, give me a Kettle One martini, three olives, glass of water on the side. I finish the drink. The guys come in. I'm going to go in my pocket, take out the big wad of money. Bam, I give her $100. If you're with the mob, I say, hey, Jordan, you're on record with us. That means we protect you. Nobody could shake you down. We could shake you down, but you're on record with us.
For more on how Jack became so trusted in the highest levels of the Gambino organization, check out episode 392 of the Jordan Harbinger Show.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.